Hi, everyone. This is Todd Henry. As we were in our planning sessions for this episode, which is about story, we thought it made sense for our resident story expert, Josh Gott, to host the episode. So without further delay, here's Josh Gott. Enjoy.
In the year 2000, I was in the middle of my college career when I transferred schools. I arrived on my new campus, and it didn't take long before I heard the chatter about one particular musician who was sort of the big fish in the proverbial small pond. His name was Nathan. And his reputation was well-deserved. Nathan knew his way around a guitar. Anytime he played, you showed up. Well, one day, the university hosted another guitarist to perform in one of the smaller auditoriums. He was apparently a world-renowned classical guitarist, though, ironically, I don't remember his name. There were maybe a couple hundred in attendance. I was one of them, and so was Nathan. The performance was mesmerizing. I was in awe, and apparently, I wasn't the only one. Legend has it, after the performance was over, Nathan was quoted as remarking something along the lines of, "If that's what it means to play the guitar, I can't call myself a guitarist anymore." That's how I felt when I first laid eyes on Neil Ford. No, he's not a guitarist. He's a storyteller. And from the moment I pressed play, I was mesmerized. See, I'm one of those annoying people who has the word storyteller in my bio. But when I saw Neil, I'm pretty sure I uttered something along the lines of, "If that's what it means to tell stories, I can't call myself a storyteller anymore." It wasn't until I spoke with Neil for this show that I realized what makes his approach to storytelling so special. It's something that, frankly, I've overlooked for years, but I've realized has the power to change everything for us in our careers and in our lives. This is Daily Creative, a podcast for creative pros who want to be brave, focused, and brilliant every day. I'm Josh Gott. Welcome to the show.
I come from 30 years in the advertising business. I worked for some of the world's biggest ad agencies, Saatchi & Saatchi and Foote Cone & Belding, in the creative end. I used to be what they called a creative director or an executive creative director, where I would be the one that was sort of the front man for the band, if you will, when we were presenting ideas to our clients. And oftentimes I would participate in what we call, you know, business development. I was out there on the warpath trying to grab new accounts. And as a result of this decades-long experience, I made thousands and thousands of business presentations. And in the same spirit of a stand-up comedian who does the road night after night after night, you develop tips and tricks and strategies and tactics for trying to reach your audience and get out of them what you're hoping to.
Now, chances are, when you hear someone today mention storytelling, this is where your mind goes. Brands trying to reach an audience, or marketers attempting to persuade you and I that their thingamajig out-thingamajigs all other thingamajigs on the market. It's true, storytelling has tremendous power to persuade and influence, and savvy marketers know how to leverage the timeless principles of storytelling to sell, whether they're selling products, services, or ideas. But that's not what we're talking about here. Despite his decades of experience leveraging story to sway audiences, Neil's work today is pointing at something different.
Yeah, so I'll tell you something that happened to me, which was, I was driving along, I made a U-turn, and I clipped the curb when I did it on both of my left tires, sidewalls. I ripped them out. And so I thought, oh, crap. But the good news was I was within about 900 feet of a tire store. So I thought, okay, well, silver lining. So I'm in the waiting room at the tire store. And there were two women in the waiting room with me at sort of opposite ends from me, left and right of me. And, you know, in a police lineup, you could easily have mistaken them for one another. They had very similar haircuts, very similar wardrobes. They were the same age in their sort of mid to late 50s. And one of them, when I walked into the waiting room, one of them was on her phone complaining loudly about a bad experience that she'd had in a restaurant. And she was moaning about some waiter that had gotten her order wrong twice. And she felt like it had been deliberate the second time. And so she was incensed and then got into a kerfuffle with the waiter and then asked for the manager and tried to get the waiter fired. The manager was having none of it. And she found that deeply insulting. And so she was going to make it her life's mission to do a scathing Yelp review and put up posters near the restaurant not to patronize this. Okay. So she finally hangs up. And then not 30 seconds later, the woman on my other side, with a very gentle demeanor, says to me, You know, I was in a restaurant yesterday and I saw the most delightful thing. I was having coffee and along comes a very pretty young woman with a big, big dog that she's out taking for a walk. And they come across this man. He's probably in his mid-80s and he's in the crosswalk, but he's reticent about crossing the street because he's terrified he's going to get halfway and the light's going to change. Well, this young woman sees this and she literally takes him by the hand. And when the green signal goes, the three of them, the two of them hand in hand and the big dog all walk across the street with the dog patrolling in front of the cars to make sure nobody threatens their safety. Then they get to the other side. And this was the part that I thought was just delightful. They have a short conversation and then still hand in hand, they just walked off together with the dog. Isn't that wonderful? And I said to her loud enough for the other woman to hear, yes, yes, that is wonderful. Now, here's my question to your listeners and to everybody in general. Who would you rather spend the afternoon with? I think it's pretty obvious that the woman who chose to tell a fun story about something she'd seen the other day, it communicates everything about her, doesn't it? You know her immediately. Just from the telling of that story, you could probably describe to me the expression on her face, the kind of glasses she would buy, whether she's a big tipper, or she knows all of the names of the women down at Denny's, right? You've never seen this woman and you've never met her, but just from the story she chooses to tell, you've peeked inside her soul. And the same is true of the other woman, right?
I don't know about you, but I rarely stop to think about what the stories I tell are revealing about my own character to those listening. But the truth is, if you want to know what kind of person I am, simply pay attention to the stories that come out of my mouth. Do I sound like someone who's optimistic about the future or cynical? A lover of peace or a magnet for conflict? A champion of others or an attention-hungry egomaniac? I'm so used to leveraging storytelling for influence that I've forgotten that perhaps the more important reason we tell stories is to create affinity with current and future friends. Or to put it more plainly, we tell stories to get people to like us. And whether we want to admit it or not, we all want people to like us. Even if you're one of those especially hard cases who say, I don't care about whether people like me or not, Neil Ford would argue that you should. Because in life, and especially at work, everything gets so much easier when people like you.
This is the fundamental lesson, is life gets so much easier when people like you. Well, there's another part of that, which is when people like you, they want you around. And it's fun and fulfilling to be desired as a friend. And so you have to be very careful what you talk about, like what stories you tell. I'll give your listeners sort of two hard-learned lessons from my career. One, never make yourself the hero of your story. Because the reaction that you're going to get from the audience is not what you think it is. You're making this yourself the hero of the story because you want them to be impressed by you. But in fact, instead of looking up at you with admiration, what they're really doing is they're looking up at you with contempt and jealousy. They're thinking, he's probably lying, since anybody who gives a good account of themselves is exaggerating, no doubt. That's the first thing. Don't make yourself the center of your story. Instead, or you can be the center, but don't be the hero. Instead, when you choose to tell a story about an incident that was relevant to whatever you're talking about, if you place yourself as an observer of somebody you admire who was doing the activity, or you saw something that you found inspirational and you're passing along this story in order to help that other person see the same thing, that, you know, maybe feel that same sense of inspiration, then they won't look up at you with skepticism and jealousy. What they'll do is they'll stand beside you and they'll think, oh yeah, that's interesting. So they treat you like a friend. They stand next to you. That's what friends do. Friends do each other's favors. They don't try to impress one another. Friends love you anyway, no matter how, you know, warts and all. So act like a friend. The second thing is make sure that the subject you're talking about is uplifting, because you don't want to leave a room worse than when you found it. People, when they know that when they tell a story, they're going to have a positive emotional reaction to it because that's your jam, that's your brand, they can't wait to hear another story. They are looking forward to seeing you again. It's a very attractive quality to have someone like hearing from you.
If you've ever heard a Neil Ford story, you know exactly what he's talking about. Every time Neil posts one of his short videos on TikTok or LinkedIn or YouTube, I always walk away feeling better. And if a little pick-me-up sounds right up your alley, then don't go anywhere. After the break, Neil's going to share a few stories, and we'll look at what it takes for folks like you and me to start tapping into the same power. Stick around. Right now, one of your potential customers is trying to decide between you and the competition. Now, the other guys are crystal clear about what they do and how they're different. You? Not so much. Who do you think's gonna win? Hi, I'm Josh Gott. I write and produce this show with Todd. But when I'm not telling stories here, I'm helping companies like yours craft a brand story that makes sense. If you're tired of being overlooked because people still don't understand what your company does, why it matters, or how you're different, let's talk. Go to gotclarity.com to simplify your message and spark new growth. That's gotclarity.com. Now, back to the show.
I was at the gym. And this, by the way, this really did happen to me. I like to go to the gym really early because it's the same people, right? The early risers are the early risers. It's the same crew every day. I like to be there about 5:30. And there's a couple of guys that are just yoked in the morning, just buff as hell. And one morning, I'm on the treadmill, and this woman walks in, and she's got that look about her like she hasn't been to the gym in maybe 4 years. And so she's a new sign up, and she's walking in, and she's looking around, and she's a little confused. And maybe she's even thinking, oh, this is crazy. I'm going to turn around and go away. Okay. And this guy who's just jacked motions to her like, come here, help me out here. And she's, what? And so she has to go literally like 20 feet over to him. And he asks her to spot him while he does bench presses. So God bless her. You know, he gets to failure and then she, you know, helps him re-rack the weight. And then he gets up and very grateful to her. I can't hear exactly what they're saying, but I can see from his body language that he's saying, thanks very much. I really appreciate that. You know, not every woman can rack that big a weight. I really appreciate that. You're a strong gal. And then all of a sudden he starts pointing out equipment. And then I realize he has asked her, are you new? I haven't seen you here before. And she said, no, yeah, this is my first day. And he goes, oh, well, you know, you can do this over there and that over there. And I thought, that clever son of a gun. I think he did that on purpose. He did the smart play, which is he asked her for a favor. He made her feel useful. And then it's the natural way for him to repay the favor by pointing out where everything is. And I said to him later in the lockers, I go, dude, that was masterful. You did that on purpose. He goes, yeah, I did. And I go, kudos to you. And he says, well, maybe I'm more than just a pretty face.
There are certain themes that Neil seems to return to time and time again. This is one of them, and perhaps the one he returns to the most. Kindness. I can think of countless others. The one about the overwhelmed Starbucks barista. The one about the World War II GI named Reno, which is Italian for rhinoceros. The one about the guy who accidentally found true love in an impound yard. But kindness isn't the only topic in Neil's repertoire. Like the one about his friend who showed up late to an important pitch. What was his name?
Rodrigo, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a big ticket account. I mean, it was hundreds of millions of dollars at stake. And Rodrigo is a Brazilian, and he's a fantastically charismatic presence. You know, he vibrates with that energy, you know, like he's a great dancer, which is a problem because when a Brazilian is a great dancer, he never stops dancing. And we were in this meeting and he was 20 minutes late and we couldn't wait anymore. And so we'd already started the pitch. And they were telling me I was going to have to do his part. I was terrified about like, oh, okay. So what did he cover? Okay. Now we are not quite to his bit, but all of a sudden we hear these thundering hoofbeats outside the room and the doors bang open and Rodrigo comes in and he goes, I'm late, but it is totally going to be worth it. And then he launches into his part. And at the end, after he's done his bit, which was fantastic and lively and, you know, filled with the human life force. At the end of it, he goes, admit it. That was worth it. That was great. What are they going to do? Right? They were caught up in it. They just were caught up in his energy. And man, we gave a great showing to the point where everybody would repeat that story about how he did that. Okay, so we're in the bar. And I said to Puerto Rico. I said, that was the greatest thing I've ever seen. And he goes, oh my God, I was so scared. I was so scared. I was pitting my shirt out in fear of being late. But then I remembered what my father said, which is, he goes, no matter what your problem is, enthusiasm is the answer to everything.
Kindness, enthusiasm, aren't these the kinds of things we all want to be known for? There's a way of describing branding as greatness by association. For example, if every time you're in the room, kindness is in the air, people will begin to associate you with kindness. The same is true with enthusiasm, or, here's a big one, belief.
I had taken my kids when they were all of about 6 and 8 to the minor league ballpark near our house in Jersey. So now none of these guys are going to the major leagues. You know, this isn't even AAA ball. And the thing is that they were playing in a league with a couple of farm clubs, you know, for like the Mets and the Pirates. Mm-hmm. So we're getting our brains beat in. And I think we were down by about 8 runs, maybe 9 runs going into the 9th. And my little girl, who's all of 6 and a half, she sees this young guy warming up in the on-deck circle, and he is just ferociously swinging this bat. And she looks up at me, she says, hey, Dad, who's number 10? So I look him up in the Xeroxed program, and I go, oh, that's Sanchez. And so she runs down to the line, and she couldn't have been more than 20 feet away from me. She goes, hey, Sanchez! And he turns around like this, and she goes, you can do it! And so he laughs. And he's a lefty, so he gets in the box and he can still see her. And first pitch, hanging curve, and he just gets all of it. And it just goes way over the fence. Okay, so everybody's like, woo, that's great. Now, he rounds second base and he sees my little girl. And she goes, wah, like that. And so now, you know, about 6 or 7 other kids come to the third baseline and they start yelling out the players' names. And it starts a rally. And guys are hitting for extra bases and they're rocking this pitcher. And now it's tied. And here comes Sanchez again because they've gone around the order. And he gets up in the big batter's box and poor Sanchez gets in the box. And the first 2 pitches, he is so far behind them, you know, like, oh no, oh no. And so the count is like 0-2. And so he gets in there and just manages to get a little fleck of every pitch that comes up. Now he's fouled off probably about 8 balls. And this guy's had enough of Sanchez. So he starts throwing at him. So Sanchez takes a step back, full count, plays his bedlam. It's chaos. The kids are screaming. Sanchez takes a step back and he looks up in the stands. And my little girl goes like this. And you can see on his face, it's this pitch or it's nothing.
Yeah.
And the guy just right down the pipe. And Sanchez got every bit of it. And it went so far out of the stadium, it was like in a backyard pool filter 2 blocks away. But before Sanchez can even round second, every kid has come down onto the field and the parents are like worried about their kids getting on the team bus, you know? And so everybody's now just mobbed the field and he works his way around and they wound up taking a team photo with the kids in it. And I was standing next to the manager and he says, is that your little girl? I said, yeah, that's Tom. And he goes, you know, Sanchez, in the year and a half he's been part of this club, he has never hit a home run. And tonight he hits 2. So my question to you is Tony coming tomorrow?
After the break, we explore what it takes to find stories worth telling. Then Neil gives us a few tips for getting them down pat. Don't miss it.
Hi, everyone. This is Todd Henry. My new book, The Brave Habit, is available now wherever books are sold, in paperback, ebook, and audiobook. I think it's my favorite book I've ever written, and a lot of people are telling me it's their favorite book as well. I think you're going to like it. So check it out wherever books are sold or at thebravehabit.com. Now, on with the show.
I don't know about you, but when I watch and listen to Neil, I find myself wishing I had stories like this. I mean, it seems like he's constantly smack dab in the middle of these magical moments. That kind of stuff just doesn't happen to me. When I asked Neil about that, he challenged me. He says, it's not that he's special. This kind of stuff happens to everyone. It's just he carries a notebook around to capture these moments and the rest of us don't. They're all around us. We simply have to pay attention. Okay, you got me there. But that got me thinking. Is there a way to shift from a passive posture, capturing remarkable moments as they come, to an active posture, actually making these moments happen more often? I don't know about you, but if I have the option to incite more story-worthy moments in my everyday life, sign me up. And that's where I really started to notice a pattern in Neil's stories. In every story, there's a moment of decision, a fork in the road, where someone could choose the status quo, like cruelty or apathy or self-doubt, but they don't. They recognize they're standing at a fork and make a conscious decision to choose the other path. Instead of intimidating the newbie at the gym, they choose kindness. Instead of slinking into the boardroom late, hoping no one will notice, they choose to burst in with unapologetic enthusiasm, knowing it'll be worth the wait. Instead of giving in to self-doubt, they choose to believe the 6-year-old girl in the stands yelling, "You can do it!" and then knock it out of the park. Twice. Every one of these stories could have easily never happened. The only reason they did is because someone saw the opportunity to be kind, enthusiastic, or daring, and they made the story happen. Life constantly presents you and I with moments like this. If we want better stories to tell, all we have to do is choose the plot twist. They may not all wind up as stories worth retelling, but just like many things in life, it's a numbers game. And as our personal notebooks get thicker and thicker, we can begin to focus in on the ones that really shine. Because part of mastering your own stories is practice.
This is another thing that people sort of misunderstand about the art of storytelling is it's a craft like every other craft, and you have to practice. And if you're going to get it right, you've got to do it again and again and again until you really like it. Think about how many times somebody like a Ricky Gervais has done that bit. That son of a gun has given that speech to the mirror or to a camera easily 500 times. And yet, when he goes on stage, it looks like he's just having a conversation. Yeah, it looks like it because he did it that many times.
Right.
He is so comfortable with that material. Now he's himself again. And people often underestimate how much they really ought to do. It's what Bruce Lee used to say, you know, he doesn't fear the man that has done 10,000 different kicks. He fears the man that's done one kick 10,000 times. You have to admire anybody who recognizes, okay, it's a craft. And like every other craft, it takes practice.
Neil's not joking around about this whole practice thing. Once you find your best stories, practice them, perfect them. Be ready to tell them at a moment's notice. If you do, they'll become invaluable. It's like you're creating a personal canon you can draw upon to build connections, inspire others, and leave a room better than you found it. People like that are the ones we want to work with. We want to hire. We want to lead our organizations. We want to entrust with more and bigger opportunities.
Storytelling is the art of making a connection that establishes an emotional reaction. Life gets so much easier when people like you. And stories are the doorway to that reaction.
If you'd like to learn more about Neil, you can look him up on LinkedIn, TikTok, or YouTube. His last name is spelled F-O-A-R-D. You can also get Neil's storytelling course at storyfire.net. If you'd like to hear the full interview with Neil or any of the thousands of industry leaders, authors, and experts Todd has interviewed since 2005, you can listen anytime in the Daily Creative app at dailycreative.app. There you'll also find daily episodes, prompts, guides, and more to help you be brave, focused, and brilliant every day. Thanks so much for listening.